Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and every week I'll be interviewing a special guest talking about how to set up a business or how to launch a new product in the local market. You're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guests this week, Stephen Cutcuti-Bonavita and David Vella from Altaro. This week, we're actually talking about their success story. Tell us a bit more about Altaro.
Hi, thanks, Monique. Altaro is a small company. It started in Malta in 2009. We develop backup solutions for small and medium-sized businesses. We don't have any more these customers. All our customers are foreign. As of today, we have around 30,000 customers.
Wow.
And we are 32 employees, actually, now.
So how did Altaro actually come about, then?
Altaro, we are four co-founders. We're all Maltese. It really started, Stephen and I used to work together for another company in Malta. We worked there for around 12 years, I think. And then there are other two co-founders, there are Julian and Simon, which actually were very close as well, and they also had their own company together. In 2009, we met. It was by mistake. I think Stephen met Simon at a social occasion, if I remember well. And we're discussing ideas. And we enjoyed each other's company. You know, we all had our dreams. We said, okay, let's team up. That's how it started. Stephen and I left our jobs. Simon and Julian did the same thing. They had companies which sold them off. And that's how Altaro started. Since then, we have been growing quite well year on year. Many people tell you that when you have many co-founders, it can be a bit tough. So, however, that's something which I think we're very lucky.
You have distinct roles, and that's defined.
Yes, we do have distinct roles, yes. However, more than that is, when you're four co-founders, right, even if you have distinct roles, sometimes it can be a bit challenging discussions. However, we actually work to make sure that our relationship is positive. So we work hard on it. We know that the problems that we sometimes can have between us are petty when considering the company. We treat the company as another individual, right? So we all work for the company. And actually, we're very, very lucky that the four of us, have been working very well together.
So you were saying that you have some challenges. Do you wish you would had done things differently from the very beginning, or are there... you sort of iron it out as you go along? Or?
Well, I think one of the things you do at the very start, well, for us it was a case of who we're going to target. And at the very beginning, we started targeting consumers. So we basically have a backup product, which allows you to back up your data on your PC. And at the very beginning, we targeted that consumer. So it could be university students, it could be people at work who want to back up their data, and just in case something goes wrong, they can restore it. And that was okay. But really what happened was that each product there was cost us, we charged about 40 euros per product. And that meant that the second somebody phoned you up because they had an issue, the fact that you're spending 15, 20 minutes on the call with that person means that you're actually losing money and you've actually lost any profit that you've made from that sale. So I think one of the things that we learned was that targeting consumers was actually much tougher than we thought it would be. And that's when we switched to targeting businesses. And we did that in about 2011, so about 2-3 years after we started the company. And that's when things really took a turn for the better, because each client had much more financial backing. They could spend more money, and the time you spend with them to help them to get set up is profitable rather than you lose money on every single one. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the main thing that we would have changed. We would have started targeting businesses a bit sooner than we did.
And anything else sort of internally, that any of the operational side of things that you might have done differently?
Not sure. We still run a very tight budget. I think if we had to do it all from scratch, the dynamics, how we work together, and internally how we do things, I think, I'm not sure if you agree, Steve, I think we'll do the same exact thing.
You do it all the same. Yeah. So have you had sticky moments as a company, this pivoting point where you had to decide whether it was continuing to target individuals or targeting businesses? How did you make that decision? Was it unanimous in the end, or?
The thing is, the background for Stephen and I is actually selling software to SMBs, to businesses, right? So we actually knew that at some point we wanted to go there, but our mistake was that we didn't do it sooner. I think we spent 2 years or 3 years on the consumer side. Yeah. So when we when we decided, you know, that it's time to do to go for SMBs, I mean, we were rallied up. We said yes, that's the way, and went ahead. At that time, the company, okay, we were generating revenue, but I mean, just enough to pay our own salaries, and that's not, it wasn't a lot of money either. Kind of it was a natural decision to a certain extent. There was, however, then again, the way we started, because it's easy saying, you know, you want to develop a piece of software for SMBs. The question is what to develop, right? So the way we got to that is that, now it's a bit technical, our development environment, we needed to back it up. And obviously we couldn't back it up with consumer software. So we're looking for this software to back up our environment. And we found out that actually there's a market for such a solution. And that's how we started.
So accidentally you
accidentally
discovered
we knew we wanted to go there, mm-hmm. to SMB, because that's where our background is, but we were not sure how. So accidentally kind of we found out where we have to go, and we just went
from our own need, basically.
And the other two founders felt the same, they had the same issue, or are they were driven from the consumer angle, or
they were the same. I mean, we found out that there's a need. I mean, realistically, we couldn't continue selling consumer. We thought it would be easier. It wasn't selling for consumer. We agree that that's the way to go.
And so apart from the cost of the support calls for the consumer, what else did you find challenging? I'm guessing you initially targeted there because you thought it would be a much easier sell because you could blanket bomb campaign.
That's what you think, exactly. That's what we thought. We said we can go out there and you can hit so many more people by whatever you do. But the reality is that the cost of reaching a person who would actually be interested in you is actually nearly the same or just a little bit less than it would be for targeting a business. So that was really it, that we started spending a lot of money on marketing or whatever it was, and the return just wasn't coming. And then when we switched to targeting businesses, we're spending a little bit more money, but we're getting much more back. So obviously that made much more sense.
Excellent. Yeah. So was there a point in there that any of you actually felt like giving up at all, and you had to get some beers in and convince the other one to stay, or is it it's been not quite that traumatic yet?
The beginning was tough. We can't pretend that it wasn't. The first 2-3 years especially were very difficult. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, we're talking about really tight budgets, so tight that even sort of David was at the point. Yeah, at the point, they, you know, our plumbing system went a bit haywire. We had issues. We couldn't really get a plumber in to fix things for us. So David became our part-time plumber, and he was unblocking the drains. And yeah, so that's
really
what happens at the
on.
Beginning. Yeah, exactly. That's what happens at the beginning.
The thing
is,
it was more than plumbing, it was actually the drainage system. The thing is that to get someone to fix this, 200 euros, right? So you have to make a choice, either to pay 200 euros to someone to open the drainage system, or use that money in marketing, right? So, you know, I had to get my hands dirty, literally, and...
because the 200 would possibly bring you 2,000, essentially.
Well,
so.
Yes. So, yeah.
That's it. Yeah, and then between the four of us, I think the fact that we're four co-founders has helped quite a lot, because if we were doing this on our own, so if I was doing it on my own, you don't have that backing of, if times are a bit tough, you don't have someone else to talk to, and you don't have someone else to back you up and push you. So I think that's something that I cherish quite a bit, that at the beginning we were all there to help each other out. If something was wrong, we can help each other out, you know, we can back each other, we can fight with each other as well, you know, it's there, and it's kind of part of it, you know, we still fight over things all the time, but it's sort of amicable. You know that at the end of it, it's all built on trust. So you're fighting for the same reason, and then at the end of it, you come out of it with a solution which works for everybody.
We're never alone. I mean, when that's tough, because things do get tough sometimes, and I feel bad, you know, I mean, I know, I can go to speak to Stephen. There are cases, for example, when it seems like you're stuck in a rut, right? I mean, sometimes I speak with Stephen, he used to actually do the agenda, what I need to do, you know, I mean, to get me out of the rut. And that actually helps. I mean, if I was alone, I think I would have given up.
So it's the team effort and actually understanding each other's weak points and strong points, I guess, but also all having a common goal is quite key for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is there anything that actually gave you sleepless nights at from the beginning, even when you get to a point where you grow so fast? What's given you sleepless nights in the last 4 or 5 years now?
I think more recently, I mean, there's a team of people, right? And it's not just a team, we're all sort of one family, especially as a startup. You build up, you add one person, you add a second person. I mean, and you spend 8-10 hours a day with these people. So the team isn't just a team, which is sort of one family. I know it's a bit cliche, but it is what really happens, because you're going through the trenches with each other, you know, getting stuff done together. So I think the stuff that keeps us up at night is that if we're not growing at the rate we need to be growing, or if we're not doing well enough, we've got 30 people who sort of rely on us to take the company in the right direction. And that's not just 30 people, that's 30 people who have families, you know, so they have dependents and loans and so on. So I think that's something that we talk about quite a lot. How do we keep this company going in the right direction without taking big enough risks where you're risking, obviously, the livelihoods of, you know, people working with you, but at the same time, where you can take the company and leap forward as well. So there's a bit of a balance there. So I think that's something that we talk about quite a lot, just how do we take the company into the right direction without making these types of mistakes.
And do you find that the success, because you've had a phenomenal success, I know you've worked obviously very hard for it, but do you find that kind of shocks you and you wake up thinking, how are we going to manage with, you know, this many customers? What happens next? Sort of, how are we going to face this next year with so many new customers growing?
The thing is, it's funny, but I think success, I mean, we're not where we need to be either. At the same time, we have a lot of things we need to do and places we want to get to. But it's funny, it's a bit like supporting a football team. You support them for 1 year and they achieve a certain goal, right? They win the Premier League, or they win the FA Cup or something like that. But really what happens is that the next year, you sort of start from scratch. And that's kind of how we are. So last year, whether we did well or very well or didn't do well at all, the year finishes and then, okay, now what's next? And
so it's starting up again every single year,
exactly,
essentially.
Exactly. You never actually sit down and say, okay, that's enough. You can stop there. And it's so strange. And it's sort of psychology. You always want to take it to that next step. And it never just catches up with you, you just stop. You just have to keep going forward. And ultimately, also because we're in the software industry, you kind of have to do that, because the second you slow down, then everybody just overtakes you. So
someone catches up.
Exactly,
and they
catch up and overtake.
Yeah. What you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So you were mentioning before about the staff and obviously the numbers of staff you have in the time. Have you found it easy to recruit staff in Malta for a startup business?
Not really. No, it can be tough. I mean, I think it's actually tougher to get engineers and stuff, but I think it's tougher actually to get sales and marketing people. No, it's difficult. And what we try to do is, I mean, we try to work a lot through word of mouth, right? I mean, we get involved also, sponsor Startup Weekend, you know, we help Charlie Abella, he does a hackathon here at university, and we try to get involved there as well. However, what we try to do is we try to make sure that our employees are happy, right? They're happy, I mean, they are well paid, and everything, because we try to get word of mouth, right, working. It is difficult, yes, it's very difficult. And we do have challenges even up till today to find certain roles. In fact, today we just published 3 new roles which we need. And I'm looking forward to see what results we're going to get, because probably it'll be a bit tough as well.
And because you're international, you look further afield as well for employees, not just in Malta?
Well, that started the last few months, actually. So we hired our first person in the States about 3 months ago, and we hired our first person in the UK this month as well. So
they work remotely?
So they work remotely. But nowadays with technology, it's easier in the office. I mean, we actually send them a phone from here, and when we phone them up on an extension number, which is just like anybody else in the office. So it seems like they're in the office, they're just not physically there. So
and not having pastizzi on a Friday morning.
No. So. Yeah, exactly.
And do you find that retaining staff, so you say you keep them happy, is it... The dream of working in a startup is that you have, you know, funky bean bags and you can take your dog to work and all of that stuff. Is that how you work? Or,
well, no dogs till now. Actually, yes. Once. I think we do quite a good job at retaining staff. Since we started, I think three people left.
That's pretty good.
One of them, and we're all friends. I mean, two of them actually, they left to start their own thing. One of them, maybe you know him. I mean, has a company in Malta, also called Rawstream. And another one started something as well. So it wasn't anything negative, you know. I mean, and when we got to know that they're leaving to start their own thing, we kept in touch to make sure they at least make it. I mean, they do it, you know, because sometimes people say they want to do their own thing, but they don't do it. So I think retaining people till now, we're lucky because we have a good team. The thing is, the company is very horizontal. We don't have really a concept of a manager, or I mean, we try to keep it as horizontal as possible. So it's all. So there's no bureaucracy, you know, it's all about work, you know, we enjoy ourselves and we also do a lot of activities, like next month we're going to have a bonfire. Retaining staff till now is not an issue. Obviously, the more employees join, the tougher it will get. But the good thing is that we are aware of that problem. So when you're aware of the problem, you make sure it doesn't happen.
And you've both worked for very large companies before, so you know when there's a couple of hundred employees involved.
Yeah, you can, yes. The thing is, up till today, sometimes, you know, even if sometimes you get a team member, you know, I mean, just passing in front of your office, right? And even if it's he's someone not in your department, I sometimes, you know, stop him. I have a quick chat with him, you know, nothing scheduled to see how he's doing, what we can improve, etc. So that's something like which I try to do as much as possible, because sometimes it's they would have something worrying them, you know, they wouldn't talk about it, you know, for us, we take it for granted sometimes, and we can fix it like that.
Because you love going to work and you just want to make sure everybody else does the yes. same sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And you never know what they're thinking, but at the same time, I think the fact that, one, we're startup, but maybe past the startup stage, but we're also sort of a local company, which is sort of taking steps abroad and internationally. I think that there's a bit of, you know, people sort of like that, and we use a lot of what the team comes up with as well. So it's not just us. We can't, you know, we've outgrown what we can actually deliver to the company that can make it more successful. It's actually what the team bring to the company that makes us actually more successful and allows us to grow. But, yeah.
That's a really healthy attitude. If you've just joined us, welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guests this week, Stephen Kekuti Bonavita and David Vella of Altaro. We're discussing their success story. So you mentioned the 30,000 customers that you have around the world. How do you actually target them based here in Malta?
Well, really, it's online, right? So that's most of the work that we do is online. So it's online marketing. It's everything from SEO mm-hmm. to pay-per-click and everything that surrounds that. For us, it was part of our strategy when we started the company, how we're going to target customers internationally. And it started with just simple things like looking for websites out there which would talk about our type of solution and getting in touch with those people and trying to get them to talk about us or write about us or mention us in some way. And that's really where it starts. And then building on from that, everything else that's related to online marketing just gets piled onto it and keeps expanding our reach internationally.
Do you do that all in English or you have a multilingual capability?
We definitely started just in English, and then as we started to grow, we then moved into German and Italian and all the other main languages.
And how important have you found that sort of localization aspect?
Much more important as we grew bigger, because we started selling quite a lot in Germany and also in Italy and in France and some other places. But then once we started translating and internationalizing, localizing all the products and so on, then that made a big difference in those regions. Yeah.
And do you find that people react differently to your message in different countries? Or do you use the same wording essentially just in a translated, or is it different hot buttons for different countries? Do you find the Germans perhaps more intense and they scrutinize detail, and the Italians a bit more light? I don't know. What sort of differences do you see in marketplaces?
Yeah, so far we haven't, we've literally just translated the stuff that we've got, and it's targeted towards an English audience, and we've translated it. Mostly because I'd love to do that, I'd love to go into a country and say, okay, let's take what the locals would really like and get a message out, but we can't do that at the moment. It's something maybe we can do in a year's time or 2 years' time.
And what about any other international aspects of your business? Do you find anything challenging, or are there lessons that you would pass on to people that are trying to target markets outside of Malta?
For us, time zone was a bit of an issue. The States is the biggest market in general. So both for us and most other companies, targeting the States is probably number one on the list. For us, it's about 34-35% of our revenue. So the challenge there is if you've got a sales query and it comes in at 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, Malta time, then that's something that you need to react to. And as you get bigger, you can't, okay, as co-founders, maybe you can answer those queries, as you know, later in the night. But as you get bigger, you have to actually staff, hire people to be able to answer those queries and help people out later on at night. So I think that was a challenge, just trying to deal with people who are in a totally different time zone than you are, who expect you to respond to them very quickly and not wait till the next day. Yeah?
And so now you have a 24/7 operation, or a up until late at night type of operation?
As of today, it's till 11 p.m. Malta time, but we're looking to, which takes care of the East Coast. Mm-hmm. But we're looking to add this year, extending it to also take care of the end of the West Coast time zone. So I think then we just have Australia. But I think till the West Coast for this year will do it. Won't be a problem at all.
That's your target for this year. And you'll be happy with that for 2016.
Yeah, probably.
What other lessons, or what lessons would you actually pass on to people wanting to start a business, not necessarily in IT, but what are the things that you've learned personally, let alone as a business itself?
I think one of the biggest lessons was really to start small. I think one of the problems we have is that when we start dreaming about things that we want to start up, a lot of times, even just speaking to sort of friends or even just myself, if I'm trying to come up with something, you end up dreaming of something big. You end up saying, okay, I want to start a new Facebook, right? And Facebook took over the world. So for us, we, at the very beginning, we bought 3 bottles of sparkling wine, not quite champagne. It's the cheapest that we found. And we put 3 stickers on them. The first one was first customer, the second one was 10th customer, and the third one was 100th customer. And the idea was that it was really about getting those really small wins of getting that first customer to come in and that 10th customer to come in. And that's, I think, sort of something that I cherish quite a lot, that you need to focus on how do I get to the next step, not how do I get to the big picture, which is, you know, take over the world and this and that and the other. It really has to start small. I remember once we used to have an ex-CEO of ours, just from a previous job. He used to tell us, what was it, how do you eat an elephant? And it was, you know, one piece at a time. And it's, again, a bit cliche, but it's true. You have to take those small steps to get to the big the big steps. You can't just go for everything at the same time.
Well, I'm hoping now you've got champagne in the office with 40,000 customer.
Yeah, we didn't open the first one. We kept them. We put them in a box. Sort of, yeah.
And you, David, do you have any lessons, even personal lessons that you've found?
Before even start, I think what I see is a lot of people, they don't even start. So they have the ideas, but they don't even start the business. A personal story, and this is actually, Stephen is involved in it in a way, is when I started, when we started, one question, I asked this to myself, what's the worst that's going to happen, right? And I realized I'm in the IT industry, right? So plenty of jobs go around. And the worst thing that's going to happen is that I start something, it fails, right? And I find a job. Right, I think that is realistically what's the worst thing that can happen. Once you realize that is the worst thing that can happen, then you can do anything. In certain countries, the worst thing that can happen is that you end up living on the streets. In Malta, right, I mean, the worst thing that can happen is that you end up living back with your parents. Right, reality is,
and I think,
you can take all the risks you want, because, I mean, it's, there's... if something goes bad, you know, I mean, you just find another job. I mean, obviously in our industry, but I think in many industries it's similar.
It's also a psychological thing. So in Malta, but not just in Malta, in Europe, I think there's a big sort of stigma against starting something and then failing, because everybody's scared to fail. In the States, it's very different. If you look at a lot of the TED Talks or a lot of the entrepreneurial speeches that people make and things like that, a lot of them talk about how they've started one company and failed, started another company and they failed. So I think it's a sort of mentality that you shouldn't be scared to take those first steps. And even if you fail, at least you can start again and do something else. But that's something that I think as a country, that's something that we can start changing. You know, it's okay. Just start it out. Doesn't work out. Doesn't matter. Just move to something else, or just find a job somewhere else. Doesn't matter. But as David said, what's the worst that could happen?
So what actually made you, because a lot of people say to me, you know, I want to start my own business and I'm a little bit scared. What made you leave your comfortable jobs, you know, you were both at high levels. What made you leave those jobs at that point and say, oh, I want to do this?
For me, it was the answer to the question, literally. Stephen and I were in my office, we're in the balcony, literally, you know, when I said, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? We knew our capabilities. We knew that we could possibly do something. You know, there should be no reason why we shouldn't be arrived to a certain revenue switch. But literally, I asked the question, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? And I say, I mean, you know, I'll find another job. I mean,
so was it every day you drove to work thinking, oh, I just want to do something on my own. I want to take my dog to work, whatever it is.
And yeah, I mean, yes. It ended up like that.
Yeah.
And for you?
Yeah, it's the same. I think you see a lot of, especially these days, even you look at, there's a TV series as well now, Silicon Valley, which talks about, you know, the startup ecosystem and this and that, the other. I mean, this stuff is happening all around us all the time, and there's so much stuff online as well, that you feel that there's an opportunity to do something yourself, and it's actually fun. You know, it's your own baby, you start it up, you can see where it goes, and I think the excitement of doing that was a big driver.
And any realities that... think, oops, that burst my bubble slightly. Yeah. I'm not going home on time, or I can't take my dog to work because now there's too many people for it to bark at. Is there other realities that have stepped in that you just didn't quite see setting up your own business?
I think
apart from the plumbing incident, probably.
Yeah. I think at that point I was thinking that a bit too high of myself, because I thought we were going to have success easier, ouch, earlier. Yeah. It took more time than we thought. That's it really, but I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, that's it. Because it took us the first sort of 2-3 years were a grind. You know, you really have to work hard to get, even just to pay the bills and to get stuff, you know, to invest in marketing, to do anything you want to do. Obviously, you need money to come in. And until that money starts coming in, you can't do much. So, yeah, those first 2-3 years were a bit of a wake-up call that it's not as easy as maybe it seems out there, that you can just start up. But, you know, you kind of have to fight through it, and then hopefully you come out of it.
But stay grounded, but stay with your goal.
Yeah, and it keeps you, I mean, it keeps you a little bit hungry as well. The fact that you aren't where you need to be makes you work that little bit harder, but yeah, sometimes that's a bit difficult as well, you know?
You know something which every entrepreneur, I mean, should make sure to follow is to keep the costs as low as possible. In our word, when we started, it was one room, semi-basement. The desks were all second-hand. Some of them were custom-made, which my cousin did, the white one.
Yeah.
So to keep the cost really, really low. And for every euro we're going to spend, you have to stop and say, am I spending it for pride or ego, which is a lot of trade shows, right? That's pride and ego. Or is it something which will literally directly help me to make more money? I think that's very, very important, you know, you have to run a really tight ship.
And any other personal lessons that we want to pass on for budding entrepreneurs?
I think just based on the stuff we were talking about. So if you're on your own, try to find someone that has complementary skills, and that person can try to join up with that person to make something happen, because it's tough on your own. I think that's the hardest part. But having someone else, at least you can bounce things off each other, and it's more fun as well.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you to this week's guests, that's Stephen Kekuti Bonavita and David Vella, both of Altaro Software here in Malta, talking to us about their success story. You can hear this show repeated again tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. Next week, I'll be talking to Yasmin De Giorgio of the Grassy Hopper about their journey building vegan cafes. You've been listening to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers. The programme is aired every Wednesday on Campus FM at 9:30 a.m. and repeated on Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. Join us again next week to hear more about your journey in starting up a new business or launching a new product.